Hi, I'm Nancy Sills. I'm 67 years old. Today's date is Friday, November 5th, 2021. We're in Columbus, Georgia. My interview partner is Jim Sills, who is my husband of 40 years.
Hi, I'm Jim Sills. I'm 67 years old also. Friday, November the 5th, 2021 is today. We're in Columbus, Georgia. Nancy is my partner, and she is my life partner.
All right. Well, Jim, I thought it would be interesting for you to tell us where you were born and growing up.
Well, I was born in Jackson, Mississippi, the fourth of five brothers. We all were born at the St. Dominic's Hospital there in Jackson. When I was almost 8 years old, we moved to Stuttgart, Arkansas, where I spent some formative years, made lots of friends, still have friends from Stuttgart. When ninth grade was rolling around, we moved to Manchester, Georgia, where we went to the Manchester High School. That's where I met Nancy. And we weren't boyfriend, girlfriend back then, but we were just friends back then. And so graduated there, went off to the University of Georgia. It was way too big for me. Came home, worked for a while, went to Columbus College, which is now the Columbus State University. Got a bachelor's degree in business, went to work at my hometown savings and loan in Manchester, Georgia. Stayed in the banking business for about 25 years, went through seven mergers, headed for an eighth merger, decided to get out. Went back to LaGrange College, got a master's of art in teaching, taught business education for 15 years in the public school system, and retired in the summer of 2016 and have been living the life since then. What about you, Nancy? Tell us about your childhood.
I was born in Atlanta, Georgia, at Emory Hospital. And when my mom and I left the hospital, we went to Warm Springs, Georgia. And my dad was the administrator of the Georgia Warm Springs Foundation, which was the hospital that was started by Franklin D. Roosevelt at his little White House location in Warm Springs. And grew up there. It was an amazing place to grow up because we would have patients and physical therapists and doctors from all over the world, those who were treating polio or those patients who had polio. So even though it was a small town, like itty-bitty, we had an amazing diversity of people who I grew up with and were around for my formative years. At the age of, I guess I was between freshman and sophomore in college, the state decided that it wanted to buy the foundation to go with the rehabilitation center that had been built, which was a public institution that was built on the grounds of this private institution, which was very unusual because people would come to the hospital for surgery and for other issues that they had. And then they would go just kind of across the road to the rehabilitation center for rehab. And so they decided to sell it. So my dad didn't want to work for the state. So we moved to Savannah, Georgia, where his family was from, and lived there until Jim and I connected again. My dad was real involved with the Amputee Golf Association, and he had a tournament in Savannah. And one of the ladies who lived in Manchester that I had known when I was in high school was an amputee, and she came to play golf. And we were talking about who was still in Manchester, and she was talking about Jim Sills. And I said, oh, I used to have the biggest crush on him. We were good friends. We had one date in high school where I invited him to go with my parents, my sister, and her boyfriend to see the Harlem Globetrotters play basketball. He probably didn't say two words to me the whole night. He was kind of shy at the time, at least toward me. We had a great time, and we were good friends, but that was kind of it. And it wasn't until she came when I was 27, and we were talking about who was still in Manchester, and I told her I had this huge crush on Jim, but to not go back to Manchester and tell him that, because, yeah, I would be embarrassed. Well, she went back and told him that I was in Savannah, and so he wrote me a letter. What are you doing? I wrote him back. That was in June or July of 1980, and we started dating in December, seriously. I guess after our first date, it got kind of serious. First date, came to Manchester. We dated. He proposed in March of 1981, and we were married in June of 1981. But I think, Jim, that you need to tell us about living in Jackson, Mississippi, on the street where you lived.
Well, we grew up in Jackson on a street called Meadow Lane. Meadow Lane was only one side of the street because on the other side was the park. There was a baseball field and playgrounds and different things on the other side of the street. On our side of the street, there were probably 15 houses. And, of course, back in the 50s and early 60s, families were big. And of those 15 houses, there were probably 48, 49 children in those families. And we just would get up in the morning and go and play all day long with those 40 children. There were spats and fusses, but the next day you'd forgotten about that, and you were just right back in there with all those friends. In fact, my mom's sister and her four children lived at one end of this street, and we lived in the middle of the street, and so we got to play with our cousins, first cousins, there on Meadow Lane. And it was just a wonderful place to grow up. We'd go out in the morning, and then at lunchtime, whichever house we happened to be around, the mom would just serve lunch to everybody. And then we'd play all afternoon, and about dark, we'd get called in for our supper, and we'd part our ways. And, you know, never had a Game Boy, never had a computer, but we had a great childhood there on Meadow Lane in Jackson, Mississippi.
How'd you divide up for teams when you played baseball or whatever with 40-something kids?
Well, you always had a captain, and then the captain would just choose who would be on their team. And not everybody liked to say play baseball, but so we'd have some who sit out and others who always played. And, you know, it was just one of those things. We tended to always get along. It was amazing to me that, you know, almost 50 kids could get along with each other as well as we did.
Because you and your brothers are quite athletic, and so are your cousins.
Yeah, we've all been loved sports all of our lives. Baseball, of course. My dad was a semi-pro baseball player. And so he taught us all how to play baseball as best we could. And we really enjoyed all of those times that we had together. And still, I still love sports. Loved watching the Braves win the World Series just a couple of nights ago. Sorry to all you Houston fans, but go Braves. And so, yeah, we had it was just a really wonderful life growing up. About like being in the foundation in Warm Springs. Tell us a little bit about your friends that you had there.
Yeah, the foundation was an interesting place because there was a core of families that lived on the foundation, lived on the property there, the grounds, in houses that originally had been owned by polio patients and their families who would come down and sometimes stay 6-9 months for treatments. And when polio was, the vaccine came about and it started to become eradicated, many of these families sold their homes to the foundation or donated them to the foundation, and that's where many of the doctors in my family, my dad was the administrator, the chaplain of the hospital lived there on the grounds, and of course they all had kids, and we also had a case of playing, and there was a field in front of the Georgia Hall where on Sunday afternoons you found the big boys, those who were older than us little kids, particularly the girls, because, you know, girls didn't play football with the boys back then. And they would play football, and we'd sit on the fence and watch them play and cheer for our best, for our favorite guys, older guys. The family across the street from us, one of my best memories of that is at Christmas, Mr. Notke was an artist. He worked in the laundry, I think it was, because the foundation, because it, the hospital grounds had to be completely self-sufficient. We had a commissary, we had a cafeteria, we had our own pool with the warm springs obviously in it. We had therapy pools, we had a school that at one time the polio patients would go to school there. We didn't go to school there, as we went to Warm Springs to the little elementary school, but we had the, you know, the books were there, and we had tennis courts, and we had a theater that had movies 3 nights a week, and the polio patients would be pushed in to watch them. But Mr. Notke was an artist, and on his porch, he had 3 panels, and every Christmas he would decorate a panel scene of some Christmas or some Christian theme. And the one I remember the most was, and I think it was the first one he put up, was of the Christmas scene where you had the nativity scene in the middle one and the wise men and the shepherds. And it just, I don't know, it was Christmas to me when Mr. Notke put that up. And we would go to the chapel and have our candlelight service and then go back and have, because all these families were there, and then, of course, all the patients who, some of them couldn't go home. And we would have, they'd have cookies and hot chocolate. And I've never burned my mouth so badly as on the hot chocolate that they would fix for us. It was just, I mean, you would think every year I would remember how hot it was, but I don't think I ever did, and my tongue would just be scalded by it. But, you know, those are memories that as a child you think, you know, how amazing that was to live at this hospital where we had people from India and Pakistan, and now we don't think anything about that. You meet somebody and they're from Bulgaria or whatever. But back in the 50s and 60s, people didn't travel like they do now. And the fact that these physical therapists or the doctors were from all over the world, and the culture that they brought to us and that we experienced there was just amazing. So you moved to Manchester, and you and your brothers were all baseball players, and a lot of the Manchester players were not. They were football players. That was a rude awakening, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a big football town. None of us played football. I remember when I was just about 8 years old, I wanted to play peewee football, and I went and asked my dad, you know, I worked up the courage and asked him, could I play? And I remember he just looked me in the eye and he said, they would break you in half. So I had to just give up on football. Started playing basketball about then. And And I really loved basketball, even more so than baseball. Most of my brothers still liked baseball best, but I liked basketball. So when we moved to Manchester, and that was a big football town, you know, basketball players weren't thought of very well. And but before we finished and we graduated back in 1972, we had taken two teams to the state tournament in basketball. And the football team, and at least in my 4 years, didn't make it to the tournament. So maybe we changed some minds and some hearts there. But and the brothers and I, we just did real well in Manchester and loved all the people there. Mom still lives there, 97 years old, and still lives two doors down from the house we moved to 54 years ago. So.
I also remember you telling me about I always think of Stuttgart, Arkansas, which is where you moved to from Mississippi, as being very flat. And you talked about riding your bikes, you and your brother riding your bikes to school, and one of those situations didn't turn out to be real well in one of your riding.
Well, yeah, we would ride our bikes to school. We started that in Mississippi. Because we only lived about maybe, I don't know, a mile or so from the school there. But when we went to Stuttgart, we did ride our bikes both to the elementary school. I went there in third grade, and then when we went to the junior high, we were coming back from lunch one day, and my brother and a friend of ours were all riding our bikes, and the friend decided he wanted to race, so he challenged my brother John and me to race down the street right in front of the junior high school. And, well, sure enough, we were racing and racing and racing, and my brother John realized we were getting a little bit out of control, and so he pulled up and started slowing down, but Bill and I just kept on. We just kept on, and finally Bill cut across in front of me, cut my front wheel out from my bicycle, and I went to tumbling down on the ground. Thought I might die, but really didn't get hurt much at all. And so it was just one of those experiences where, you know, you learn the lesson as you go through life, which I'm sure you've learned many lessons in.
Yeah, but what was the lesson you learned?
Don't race, at least... Or let Bill win, maybe, if you think you're going to crash at the end of the race. So.
But didn't some lady pick you up or was worried that you were hurt or something and wanted to take you to the hospital?
Yeah, she did. She was riding in her car, bringing her child back from lunch, and she saw the tumble. And, of course, so she stopped her car and made me get in the back seat of her car because she just knew I had broken my neck or something, and drove me not just to in front of the school, but drove up the sidewalk next to the building. And all the people were at lunch, and so they were just all staring into the back of her car, where there was little Jim sitting there looking out like, oh, boy, I don't know. And, well, as it turned out, nothing was wrong, but I had to go to see the doctor, and my mother came and picked me up and took me home and patched my little scratched knee. And so, and I do remember the best thing was that my brother John rode his bicycle home, walked back to the school, and got my bicycle and rode it home also. So
the bike wouldn't hurt just you?
Oh, yeah. Now, well, the bike wasn't hurt, and really neither was I.
Okay. That's so surprising that y'all were allowed to go home for lunch. Did everybody do that?
No, not everybody did. If you didn't live, you know, close by, you couldn't go. But we only lived a short distance from the junior high school, and we would go home for lunch lots of times.
Yeah. See, we weren't allowed to go home for lunch. Of course, it probably would have been too far for us to even, you know, walk or ride a bike or whatever. Or at least in my mind now, I think it probably was. But that's interesting that you could walk home or ride a bike home to eat your lunch. You know, now with schools, they wouldn't let you do that.
Yeah, it was a different time back then, you know. Yeah. Life was simpler, and not as many things to worry about as they have today about different things. So,
well, when we got married, I was a teacher already, and I, for at least a year or two, I think, before, after we got married, I didn't teach, and we had our oldest daughter, Jenny, during that time, and then I decided I wanted to go back to teaching and worked in a pre-kindergarten there in Manchester where we first were living when we got married. And then we moved to Savannah. And in Savannah, we had our two other daughters, Laurianne and Amanda. And then we all moved to Albany, where we lived for 5 years, and then came back here to West Central Georgia, to Harris County, and have been here for 26 years now.
Yeah.
And so I taught for 41 years before I retired back in 2019, right before COVID happened, which I'm kind of glad I didn't have to deal with that. We've been asked, how has COVID affected us? And as far as retirement, it really hasn't affected us much. We live kind of in the country. We do live in the country, kind of far away from others. So we don't really see, you know, we haven't had a problem with COVID, I don't think. Do you think that we've been affected much by that?
No, I wouldn't say that it's affected us. You know, it mandated some things that we weren't used to, such as these silly masks that we still have to wear. But you know, we just kind of continued our life right along. But we didn't spend a lot of time with others anyway, so it wasn't a big event. Family, you know, we got to stay with family still, and got to see all of those daughters and their families, and so I would say that probably it was not a very big event in our lives, much more so in others' lives. You know, we weren't affected by anyone, you know, that we knew close to us that was affected and even really had COVID, and certainly not anybody that passed away from the
I think
virus.
The biggest thing that affected us with COVID is not going to Camp Dawson.
Yeah, that's it's affected us pretty much. We have an every other year family reunion. My grandmother on my mother's side wanted to get us all together, and in 1987, she had planned that we would have this great big Thanksgiving, and unfortunately, she passed away in the summer of that year, and we, you know, thought about, well, we shouldn't have this reunion that grandmother had planned, and she's not here anymore. But we did it, and for, over 30 years, we continued to have every other Thanksgiving family reunion style over at Camp Dawson, where we spent 3 wonderful days. If you're an insider, if you're an in-law, you may not feel the same way.
Well, you need to explain who was there. Who was with this? Because it's kind of, I mean, it's gone from it being, 40 people to like 90 the last one?
Yeah, it's my mother and her two sisters and their families. And like I said earlier, back in the day, you just had larger families maybe. And so my mother had 5 sons, and her two sisters had 4 and 4 children each. And, of course, all of those have gotten married and had children, and their children have had children. And so, yeah, we had about 84 or 5 that sat down for Thanksgiving when we got to have it back in 2019, I guess, was the last one that we had. Mm-hmm. So we've canceled it for this year.
Yeah, it is fun. The families like to play games and play board games and play card games, and the kids play hide and go seek at night, and this is in a big old farmhouse that is part of a church camp, but it's an old house that they have converted to have bunk beds and a big kitchen, not big enough sometimes, but big kitchen. Everybody brings food so that you're not cooking for 80 people and thinking, you know, I'm doing this on my own. One family, like the Sills family, might bring the turkey and dressing, and the children might bring, you know, a vegetable, and then you might bring cinnamon rolls, or you might bring pancakes, and whoever's up, whatever kids have awakened at 7 o'clock in the morning or six sometimes, who's ever up makes them pancakes or puts out the cereal. And there's this big room at the end where we eat and play Foursquare, and you just, the food is out there, and you just kind of graze, it seems, all day long. We have hamburger hot dog cookout on the Friday night. One of the cousins makes soups and chili when we all get there on Wednesday night for those who are there. And it is, it's a fun time. It's nice.
Well, so tell me, just maybe your fondest recollection of your dad, George, and your mom, Mary Helen. What's maybe the fondest memory that you have?
I guess it would be being at the golf course with them. My parents both liked to play golf and taught their daughters. I have a sister that's 2 years older than I am. And so it was being together and playing golf. My dad was, like I said earlier, was very involved with the Amputee Golf Association. He had fought in World War II. He was a pilot. And for some reason got involved with amputees, in that he would have, like, a left amputee send their right shoe to him. And then somebody would, who was a right amputee, would send him a letter and say, I'm looking for size 9 men's shoe black. And Dad would send them shoes. And he got real involved with that. Got an award from the Better Homes and Gardens for doing that kind of service to people. And he got real involved with it because he liked golf, with the Amputee Golf Association, even nationally. And so every summer we would have a tournament at the foundation, at the golf course, for the amputees. And I think it was having that experience of seeing these people who might not have but one arm. They had lost both legs. I know one gentleman in particular had lost both legs and an arm. And the man could hit a golf ball farther than some people that I know who have all four limbs. And so being with my parents and seeing their giving, loving service to others made a huge impact on me to want to do that or think that that was important in our lives. So,
mm-hmm. What about Mary Helen?
Well, she was involved with that too.
Yeah.
Because she was the hostess.
Uh-huh.
She made sure that everything was the way it was supposed to be. And I don't know, just that same experience of, we always had people in our home and opened it up to us. Both my grandmothers lived with us for a number of years. And I think that says a lot about her, as well as my dad, in people don't do that much anymore, have grandparents or parents live with them. And sometimes you have to. Sometimes, you know, there's no place to put them, or you can't do anything but have them in a nursing home. But back then, that was just something you did, like your grandmother lived with your aunt for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having those experiences and seeing what your parents did for not only community, but their own family was very teachable time for me. What about you?
Well, you know, my fondest memory of your mom was those bourbon balls. I mean, really, you never knew when Mary Helen was making bourbon balls until she started singing. And we're not sure whether most of the bourbon went into the bourbon balls or most of the bourbon went into Mary Helen. We weren't quite sure about that, but those bourbon balls sure were good.
We would kid her that, you know, she'd put a cup in here and she'd take a cup and, oh, I need maybe a cup and a half. And so, yeah, that was.
Yeah.
Yep. But your dad played golf too a lot.
Yeah, he was just a natural athlete and used either hand very well. And he never played a lot of golf growing up, but then played a little bit of golf before we moved to Manchester. But after we got to Manchester, golf became his passion. And
Because he played at the foundation too.
Oh yeah, he was a very good golfer, utilizing baseball swing almost like anyone I had never seen before. You know, the golf swing and the baseball swing are not very similar to each other, and of course, Dad, being the natural baseball player that he was, he just transitioned that over into golf and played very well. And in fact, in one year, probably in his mid-60s, maybe early 60s, I don't know, became the club champion out there at Warm Springs. And there were some really good golfers that he had to beat. So, but, you know, that was just
he played a lot of golf, though. I mean,
oh yeah, he would.
I mean, he would go out on Saturdays and play. Lot of golf.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
36, 72 holes
maybe
or so.
Maybe he played too much. I think maybe my mom would tell you that he played a little too much golf sometimes. But anyway, it was just a really good time. The foundation course was very well maintained for being just a small nine-hole golf course. And had great PGA pros there and that kind of thing. So it was a good place to play, and they keep telling us that they're going to renovate that course, but nothing ever happens. So we just wish that it would. It's an old Donald Ross course. Mm-hmm. So
how about memories of your mom or memory of your mom?
Mom, I don't know. I guess you just have to call her Saint Myra because
amen.
Putting up with the five of us for all those years. I guess probably one of the things that makes me smile sometimes is when we would all be home in the summer and we'd all have these little chores that we would have to do. You know, it might be wash the breakfast dishes or, take out the trash or sweep the floor, you know, and everybody had one of those jobs to do. And so if you didn't get your job done, my mom would, of course, find out about it, and she would say, go into the bathroom, and it wasn't cleaned like it should have been. And so she would just start calling out all the brothers' names, and, you know, she would say, Jack, Jay, John, I mean, Jim. So it was just one of those memories that I have to where, you know, she would just finally just say, well, just one of y'all come in here, so... but that's one of those things. And, of course, so she's still with us, 97 years old, and still St. Myra as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I think maybe what you need to tell us, the last thing, is about the records, Jay and his records and you touching them.
Oh, wow. My brother Jay was, he's really big into music. He played the guitar, and now he plays guitar, piano, banjo, violin, I don't know, all kinds of things. But he was big into music, and he spent a lot of his money on albums, you know, they're back now. People are playing vinyls again, but back in our day, my brother Jay had this nice collection of vinyl albums. And so while he was on his paper route, I would sneak into his room and get one of the albums out of the little rack that he had there with his albums in it, and very carefully put it on the stereo and play it for a little while. And then long before I knew he was coming home, I would take it off of the stereo and put it back in its sleeve, nice, like just like it was, and then push it back right into the rack, right where it was. And inevitably, when he would come home, he would say, "Who's been playing my Rolling Stones album?" And of course, Jack would always tell on me. And so I can remember one day just running down the street from my brother Jay because he was going to bop me on the head because I shouldn't be playing his albums. And of course, you know, the next week or so, I'd kind of forgotten about it, and I'd play another album, and I'd get another bop on the head. So, but yeah, anyway, that's
I didn't
all.
Know that Jack was telling him. I thought you had always told us or the girls that you were. He just knew it. Well, he just knew one had been pulled out.
Oh well,
was
he
not back in
he
its
knew
right
it
place.
Was had been pulled out. He just wanted to know which one of us had done it. And I don't. Maybe Jack did it a few times and then blamed it on me. I don't know. But anyway, so.
All right.
That's just family life, you know.
Yeah, it is.
It was different growing up in the 50s and the 60s and a simpler time and didn't have to have a whole lot. And your best friends were your brothers and still are, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what? I know that you were a teacher. Did you always want to be a teacher or?
No. No, I wanted to be Jacques Cousteau's diving partner.
Oh.
But mm-hmm. I knew that wasn't going to work. And I wanted to be Maria Von Trapp, Julie Andrews. But you have to have a voice like Julie Andrews to be able to be Julie Andrews. So that didn't work. So teaching was one of those things where I thought, I can sing and I can do science stuff and I can all do that in my classroom. So becoming a science teacher, I think, was what got me earth and space science, made me feel like I could do all the things that I didn't get to do. I could still sing in my classroom. I could still, well, I couldn't swim in my classroom, but could study the oceans and all that without it. So, yeah.
Well, and So
for 40 years we've been married, and it's been a good marriage.
It has been a good marriage. We've had three lovely daughters, and they have chosen husbands well. Amanda's still looking for hers, but she'll find it someday. And then we have those grandchildren that, you know, I think really, if you think about it, you probably should have them first.
Amen.
Because
they're so much more fun.
They're a lot of fun to have, and then you get to send them home with their parents at the end of the day. And and so it's been really good. We've had a very good life together, and I appreciate your being my partner for all these years and look forward to the next 40 years. So.
I agree.
Okay.